everyone. Welcome in to the weekend edition
of the Corwin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in company's profile.
Now, the Corwin Economics Report. We are commentating on the markets and also talking to a number of company executives to get really up to date on what the company is doing, mostly focused in the resource sector. We are kicking off this weekend show with Jesse Felder, founder and editor of the Felder Report. And Jesse, look, you post quite a few blog posts for your subscribers talking a lot of big picture concepts when it comes to Fed policy, market sentiment, and global issues. We'll break down a couple of the key factors, mostly focused on markets and where investors are positioning themselves. Let's first just quickly touch on Fed policy, because right now we know a fair bit about what the Fed is thinking in terms of rate hikes and when those will start, which the expectation is for next month. We don't know if it'll be a 25 basis point hike, 50 basis point hike. Either way, the process of hiking rates is starting. But there's a few things that we really don't know about Fed policy, and that is potential balance sheet unwind. Or one thing we are discussing off mic is potential yield curve control. This is a concept that's been, in a way, almost forgotten, although we were talking about it a couple years ago. Jesse, give us your thoughts broadly on what the Fed is going to do here and what's important for investors to watch as they undoubtedly announce new policies and potentially change some of their guidance.
I think maybe one of the important, most important points people need to understand is that the Fed has been outright monetizing the U.S. federal debt for at least a decade now. After they started QE2, Ben Bernanke was accused, when testifying in front of Congress. This was almost 11 years ago, exactly to the week. He was accused of monetizing the debt. That's what the purpose of QE is for. He said, no, look. We are not monetizing the debt. What monetizing the debt looks like is a permanent increase in the money supply in order to help fund the government's needs. What we're doing is temporary. The balance sheet's going to $2-3 trillion maybe, but we're going to normalize. We're going to bring it back down to $1 trillion here. And so these are just temporary operations to support the economy. Well, the Fed's balance sheet has gone from $2-2.5 trillion to almost $9 trillion. In the last 10 years. So this is a permanent increase in the money supply. We've seen a massive increase in the money supply, a permanent increase in the Fed's balance sheet. And especially over the last 2 years, I mean, the Fed has printed so much money. They've essentially funded 70% of the government's funding needs for the past 2 years. So this is, according to Ben Bernanke's definition, this is monetization of the debt, and I don't think there's any way the Fed can get out of this. They're trapped. They're now in what economists kind of refer to as fiscal dominance, where the Treasury's needs take precedence over anything else the central bank might want to accomplish, including a normalization of interest rates or monetary policy. So the Fed is going to try and normalize monetary policy, but every time they've tried to do that over the last 10 years, it's caused problems in the markets. And in reaction, the Fed has said, hey, okay, sorry, we're not going to normalize. We're going to go back to printing money because they're trapped into doing this. And so I think that is basically the pattern that they're in. And even, you know, former Fed officials have been warning about this for a long time. Tom Hoenig has been warning, you know, when he was a voting member on the FOMC, he dissented many times during these QE, periods. It was really the lone dissenting voice. But, you know, he's been coming out recently saying the Fed is trapped. They basically opened Pandora's box when they started QE, and the amount of debt that's been created basically makes it impossible for them to normalize. And so I do think we're going to hear talk about yield curve control at some point in the near future again as the economy slows and the Fed attempts to normalize. We've already seen mortgage rates go from 3-4% in just, you know, a couple of months' time. And that, you know, is could become really problematic for household balance sheets, and if it puts creates a slowdown or a bear market for real estate prices, And the Fed, you know, understands these risks. They understand the risk to the corporate credit markets. I think, you know, that's a lot of thing. Another thing people don't maybe appreciate enough is the Fed put is not based on the S&P 500. It's based on corporate credit spreads. Ben Bernanke, Jay Powell is a former private equity guy. He knows what corporate leverage looks like and how vulnerable it is. And so we're going to see a slowdown. We're going to see them normalize, and then we're going to hear talk about how the Fed is going to stay involved in the Treasury market. And they may not use the word permanent, but it's becoming more and more obvious that this is a permanent feature of the Treasury market.
Yeah, Jesse, they may not use the word permanent, but their emergency accommodation back in 2009 has gone on over a dozen years now, and they're just now finishing the tapering. Everybody's been talking about how tightening has been happening, but they really haven't tightened anything yet. All they've been doing is reducing the amount of purchases. And so you just mentioned that the goal of the Fed is to normalize the rates, but with the CPI reading of 7.5, with PPI readings over 9%, can they really normalize things? And even if they moved it up a percentage point or 2 percentage points, would that really tame inflation? And what can they really do to get on top of inflation without getting crushed by the debt load?
It's the $9 trillion question, right? That's the balance sheet. I think the only way the Fed is going to rein in inflation and break the inflationary psychology that's building right now in the economy is by creating a recession. You're going to have to tighten policy enough. And I don't know where that is. That might be 1% on the Fed funds rate, might be enough to crash the stock market, which would create a disinflationary impulse of its own and kind of put people in a different mindset than they're in right now. So I don't know where that is. But if they do allow the asset markets to reprice enough, then that can kind of break the inflationary psychology. I just don't think that they're willing or able to allow monetary policy to go that far to create a recession and to really, create the pain in the markets that is required to rein in inflation. They might get it whether they want it or not. They're playing with fire here. They've essentially created a situation where the markets are now, but Treasury market, stock market, corporate bond markets are completely dependent on Fed intervention. And now that they're removing it, it's essentially pulling the floor out from under these things. And, it's a very dangerous game.
So, Jesse, what about past tightening cycles from the Fed? Because the Fed has tried to tighten before, I believe, 11 of 14 monetary tightening cycles since 1955 were followed by increases in unemployment and, quite frankly, drops in markets and drops in sentiment. Are you comparing this tightening cycle to any of the other past ones in terms of what we can expect market-wise, sentiment-wise?
I think, yes, I'm comparing it. I think one of the things that is most interesting to me is some of these gaps between what the market is pricing in and what is likely to happen going forward. I think the only tightening period we could look back to are the last couple, when the Fed was tightening into 2018. Really, I mean, Jay Powell's tightening is really kind of the only one we can look back to. This is the only one in modern times when we'd had as much money printing as we have today, and markets that are so dependent upon the Fed. But to me, I think, Bridgewater put out a piece recently, and I thought it was fascinating that markets are now pricing in a benign outcome in terms of inflation, in terms of the economy and the stock market. And I think, the Fed is not going to be able to have its cake and eat it too. They're either going to be able to rein in inflation, and they're going to have to hurt the economy and the risk markets in the process, or they're going to protect the economy and the markets, and they're not going to be able to rein in inflation. And so, basically, I think as an investor, you're making bets on right now on what you think that outcome is going to be. But if markets are pricing in, inflation's going to come back down to normal, and the stock market and the economy are going to be okay, then there are opportunities to profit from that. And really, that was Bridgewater's point, is that, to the extent that that consensus is wrong, it yields opportunities for investors to kind of play those trades. And now I think, what are those? Well, you know, if that's what markets are pricing in, then probably the dollar's overvalued, gold's undervalued, stock market is potentially, vulnerable as well. And so, I think those are, the interesting things to look at right now in terms of what's going to happen over the next 6 months.
Well, Jesse, you put out a piece last weekend that highlighted that we are seeing the most negative forward guidance on earnings from companies at the same time as most of the stock market participants are still betting on record high margin growth. And there's a big disconnect there. I would love you to highlight that a little bit and unpack that for our audience.
Yeah, actually, I think it was, I can't remember, it was one of the big research houses that tracks analyst estimates, and analyst estimates are now discounting or essentially expecting the highest margins, profit margins in history. We already have the highest margins, but they're expected to actually expand to even fatter profit margins. And to me, that's astounding in light of the fact that company guidance, as you mentioned, Chad, has been, earnings guidance has been the most negative since 2009, since we were just coming out of the Great Recession. And so companies are telling, there's also an interesting, I think John Authors published, when you look at companies, just the words that company managements are using, when they talk about pricing power, that's usually a good leading indicator of margins. When they talk about more about labor costs, that's usually a good leading indicator of negative margins. And that's exactly what we've seen in the last few quarters, is companies went from talking about pricing power in the last several quarters to now, in the most recent quarter and the one just prior to it, they're talking more about labor costs than pricing power. Essentially, they're telling you our margins are going to come under pressure. And if profit margins come under pressure, then the PE on the S&P 500 is going to quickly look really expensive. It's why the price to sales ratio looks so dramatically overvalued today relative to the PE ratio, because profit margins are so fat that they make PE ratios look less dramatic than they are. But if profit margins are going to now normalize, then the price to sales ratio, as it usually does, will prove to be the more valuable valuation metric. And right now, we're still about 30% more expensive than we were at the peak of the dot-com mania in 2000 on price to sales ratios. So if margins are now going to contract, then you have a huge, repricing in the stock market that needs to happen.
Jesse, does this all tie into general liquidity, though? Because kind of circling around to the first topic is that, look, there is a lot more money in the system now, even with the Fed potentially starting to tighten. And so that money does end up in the market. So what is a reasonable valuation now when, quite frankly, there is just more capital available?
Well, I mean, that's a really good question. I don't know how to adjust valuations based on the money supply. I will tell you that there's a really good relationship between M2 growth year over year and the stock market year over year. And M2 growth has been decelerating quickly and is going to continue to do so if the Fed is able to taper and eventually shrink the balance sheet. And I think that's what most people are worried about right now. This is what the Fed is most worried about, is the Fed really doesn't know. They've guessed, and none of us really know what the effects of quantitative easing have been in the markets and in the real economy. We can guess and point to things that, all this money printing has supported asset prices and things. I think the most obvious thing is that money printing that we've seen over the past 10 years has supported animal spirits in the markets. This is a concept I think we've talked about before, and it's as old as central banking. The central bankers know that when they print money, they can get people excited about speculating. And this has been a relationship between central banks and investors for centuries, honestly. And so when you end that money printing, you risk killing the animal spirits behind a lot of these things. And I think this is another just gap that I'd point to, is we see dramatically deteriorating consumer sentiment over the past couple of years. So as The stock market has soared higher. Consumer sentiment has gotten really negative. And normally these things go together. This is why the Fed has tried so hard to create a wealth effect, because they know we push the stock market up normally, that makes people feel better about the economy. They go spend more. Well, that hasn't been the case during this latest boom in the stock market. And there's only been, you know, when you look at, I think I first saw this chart from Bianco Research, this terrific chart. You take the 3-year correlation between the stock market and University of Michigan consumer sentiment, and normally they're really highly positively correlated, 50 to 90%, you know, stock market goes up, sentiment goes up. What we've seen in the past 2 years is something dramatically different, where sentiment has plunged while the stock market has moved higher. The only times we've seen this correlation become so negative was in 2007, right, when the real estate market was starting to roll over hard. Consumers starting to worry about their personal finances and the economy, and the stock market was soaring to new highs in the summer, fall of 2007, right before the financial crisis really kicked off. And again, we saw it in late 86, early 1987, when people started becoming worried about inflation again, and the Fed was going to tighten, and really kind of some of the catalysts of the 1987 stock market crash. But this deterioration in sentiment, I mean, consumers today are worried about their personal finances. They're worried about their ability to keep up with, you know, inflation in terms of their purchasing power. And I worry that it could be a harbinger of deteriorating risk appetite. This, I guess, the death of animal spirits in the stock market. It's really worrisome to me.
Well, yeah, Jesse, we've definitely already seen a lot of the death of animal spirits with the meme stocks capitulating, with some of the tech and growth stocks capitulating, with cryptos having a little bit of a pullback. And we've seen even things like the NASDAQ, where 40% of the NASDAQ stocks are down over 50% year over year. So are off their all-time highs, I should say. So we're already seeing the death of animal spirits. So I guess the question is, with all these macro factors, with the Fed getting ready to hike and try to normalize, with the potential of causing a recession, and all of these pressures building up, do you think that gold will start getting a safe haven bid as a risk-off asset with all of these different currents swirling around?
I think it already is. I think that's exactly why gold is going up lately. A lot of people have been stunned that, you know, supposedly gold and real interest rates have gone, you know, in opposite directions. There was an interesting piece in the Financial Times that was just about this topic. And when you look at gold and tips, they've had a very close relationship, performed very similar typically. But last year, or, you know, the last 18 months or something, we saw tips really soar strongly higher to new highs, and gold went into a correction. So they really diverged, and now, you know, tips have been getting hammered, and gold has been doing really well. So people are, you know, kind of stunned. Wait, what is going on? Why are they so off? Well, I think the thing that I've kind of just thought about is that, you know, the tips market has been massively manipulated through QE over the past 18 months, 2 years. The Fed, you know, came in and bought more tips as a, you know, percent of bonds outstanding than any other, you know, securities they were buying. And so they became, you know, you can't really trust the price signals in the tips market. So how do you explain, if it's not real interest rates, you know, driving, you know, the gold price, what is it? Well, there's a great quote in this FT article. I think people are starting to look more towards protection against dollar devaluation and wealth preservation and those other aspects of gold. And that is kind of why, I put out that blog post today, that people need to understand the Fed is monetizing the debt. They're trapped into doing this by fiscal dominance. The Treasury's needs are now greater than anything else the Fed may want to do. And in that scenario, you need to protect your purchasing power. Gold is the most obvious way to do that. And so I think investors are just beginning to appreciate this, which is why gold is starting to catch a bid again.
Jesse, isn't that true in other countries too? The monetizing of debt by central banks? It seems like other central banks are also stuck in this trap.
They are, but I mean, I think a lot of them, you know, you look at the European nations and they have, more constraints on what governments are allowed to do, right? And they essentially follow the Fed's lead, right? I mean, you look at the European Central Bank and they're not doing anything that the Fed is not going to do first. And so Yeah, it is true. But I think it's, you know, to me, it's most important to see it being done in the Treasury market, because it's the market where I can look and see the Fed is stepping away from tapering and interest rates are going up. Normally, what I would expect, if this was just quantitative easing, tapering would lead to a slowdown in the economy. That would be make for lower interest rates. The fact that rates are going up as the Fed is tightening tells me that the Treasury market has been falsely supported by the Fed for the past several years, and it can't function without Fed intervention anymore. And to me, that is a very, very important signal that the Fed is going to be forced to maintain this type of position.
All right, Jesse, we're going to wrap it up here. I think no one's denying that the Fed is going to have to switch course again to some sort of easier monetary policy, and they haven't even started hiking rates yet. We just don't know when that's going to happen. But boy, oh boy, it has been interesting to see, again, inflation continue to stay high, markets show a little bit of weakness early on this year. Gold's gotten a little bit of a perk, but again, that's been pretty flat. It's been quite the dichotomy in terms of market moves and where investor sentiment is. But yeah, very interesting. Always hearing what you're writing about, what you're seeing out there. I look forward to having you back on the show, and I hope you have a great rest of your week.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.